Welcome everyone to the U Fancast, now powered by BlockU.com on the SB Nation Network. And we're coming to you as we always do from the Red Zone store in Sandy, Utah. Remember to get all of your Utah Utes merchandise at any of their four locations. And remember to always patronize the Sandy store. And right now, you know, tonight we're going to talk a little bit about the NFL. Of course, we're going to talk about the Ute players who just participated in the NFL's draft combine. So guys, I mean, we had Eric Rowe, Jeremiah Patassi, Nate Orchard, Drez Anderson, and of course, Kalen Clay. You know, of all of them, really, I think the one player that probably a lot of us dismissed for no reason other than there were other candidates like Nate Orchard who were more highly decorated, Kalen Clay, who was an All-American and so forth. But the one who really showed out, showed well at the combine was cornerback Eric Rowe. And at 6'1" with 4.45 speed, he's looking to maybe move up into a, you know, first day, maybe even first round pick. What do you think, Shane? Excuse me, Alex.
Yeah, 4.45 speed, which Clay posted a 4.51.
Yeah.
Which who would have thought that? I mean, I would have thought Clay was going to go sub 4.4.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, he was the fastest 100 time coming into the combine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you could just, if you watch Rowe and Clay, no offense to Rowe, Rowe does not look as fast as Clay on the football field. You know, he never looked that fast to me.
He's just big.
Yeah.
Bigger bodies don't look as fast. They just kind of gallop.
And the other thing, you know, if you look at Rowe, I mean, the NFL.com on their combine, they have top performers for different events. And Rowe was a top performer in the 40-yard dash, the bench press, the vertical jump, the broad jump, the three-cone drill, the 20-yard shuttle, and the 60-yard shuttle, which is all of the events. And his 39-inch vertical leap, I mean, when you think about it, he's 6'1", which is already decent sized for an NFL corner, and you throw a 39-inch vertical leap, that's a lot that a quarterback's going to have to throw it over. And 19 reps on the bench press, being a top performer there, it shows in the kind of style that Rowe plays. He's a press man corner. He's gonna be able to disrupt the receiver at the line of scrimmage. And, you know, a lot of teams, with the success of teams like the Seattle Seahawks running press man with big corners, and you look at what Rowe was able to do at the combine, I think he really, really helped himself. I don't think he's going to be the first corner taken. I think that's probably going to be Trey Waynes, who ran a 4.31 40, but I think Rowe is definitely going to move himself up some draft boards here.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt that he made himself some money at the combine, as the phrase usually goes. Let's just say who was, outside of Rowe, who was your surprise in a positive way, and who was your surprise in a negative way, Shane?
Well, Rowe surprised me just basically based off of his speed. I knew he wanted to run a 4.4. I didn't think he would run a 4.4, but I know he came out and said he's aiming for a 4.4. I don't know if there's really any surprises outside of Rowe in terms of positive surprises. I think Patassi did, you know, about what I kind of expected, maybe a little bit better. Would have been nice to see. Orchard, I think, was in the same ballpark I kind of expected. Drez, the only thing he did was bench. He didn't do any speed drills coming off his torn meniscus, so I'm assuming we'll see that pro day.
Given that, I mean, the 40-yard dash is, you know, it's kind of a hard number to for speed guys like running backs, like wide receivers, like defensive backs. It's a decent measure for linemen, I guess. Maybe it has less application. But it ran a 5.32, which was fairly slow even for the offensive lineman. Do you think that, I mean, in retrospect, you know, explains why he kept getting beat by speed rushers?
No, I don't think the 40 has anything to do with it. I'd like to see his maybe his splits in terms of where was he at 10 yards, where mm-hmm. was he at 20 yards.
His 10-yard split wasn't great. I don't remember what it was off the top of my head, but it was significantly slower than, like, say, Zane Beatles ran at the Combine.
Well, Zane's still in the league, though, so he's doing pretty good.
Yeah, I just figured that'd be a good comparison. He's having a pretty good career.
I think the first 2 years ago now, I think Patassi, he was battling injury. They never came out and stated what he was battling, but he was battling injury, and I think that was apparent in the games like UCLA where Anthony Barr just made him look like a fool. This last year, he never jumped out at me in terms of struggling in terms of pass protection more so than any other insert name here offensive lineman. So I thought as a whole he performed pretty well his final year post a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you know, he might not be the fastest guy, but he's long. I mean, he's got a I'd like to see his measured wingspan. I bet you it's 7 foot. I'd be surprised if it wasn't. So he's a long guy. I mean, the name that everybody's going to throw out in terms of disappointment would be Kalen Clay. I think that's the one that kind of jumps out at everybody. When his numbers hit Twitter when I was kind of checking out what was going on, I kind of had to do a double take.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, it kind of made sense to me. I think he put so much pressure on himself that he kind of robbed himself of a little bit of speed, which I think we'll probably see him make up at Pro Day when he's a lot more comfortable in an environment that's a lot more natural to him. But that definitely put him behind the eight ball, that's for sure.
Absolutely. I mean, he definitely put some pressure on himself for Pro Day, for sure. I mean, obviously, if he runs, you know, 4.4, sub 4.4, you know, he probably doesn't need to, you know, run at all on Pro Day. But like you say, now he's kind of under the gun.
Yeah.
Not that 4.5 is terrible, but it's definitely not, you know, it's pretty pedestrian for a wide receiver.
Which I think, you know, as you watch the combine, and I didn't even really watch it, I just saw some of the highlights. I think it's kind of a joke, which, you know, a 40-yard dash, I mean, it's applicable to a point, but just the fact that so many of these prospects, Utah or not, get so much pressure put on an arbitrary distance and speed, when in reality, I mean, you look across NFL rosters where so many of these players are undrafted, but not only that, you look at a player, I mean, one of the more popular ones is like a Tom Brady, for example. They always show his combine footage, and it's basically like an SNL skit. It's a joke. I mean, I don't know what the point of the combine is. I almost wonder if it's become like a just to measure somebody's competitiveness at some point, to where they're saying, okay, is this guy working from now or from the end of the season to now, or have they just kind of mailed it in? So I wonder if it's even about the numbers anymore, because see an offensive lineman run a 40, they're going to do that in a game total. So I just don't quite get it myself. It just kind of is annoying.
I was listening to, I think it was ESPN 700, and they were, and I think it was one of their national shows, and they were talking about some of the advanced metrics. I mean, like almost like saber metrics for football that some of the teams were using. And I thought, you know, if you, maybe, you know, I don't know, but maybe you apply, you know, saber metrics to Nate Orchard and he doesn't grade well. But my God, did you watch him play?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what does the film say at the end of the day?
Well, I mean, the film, he led the nation in sacks per game. He led the nation. He was an All-American, not a consensus, because, you know, he kept going back and forth with the other guy who also led the nation in sacks.
Yeah.
You know? But, I mean, he was an All-American, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah, I know the NFL.
He was a Pac-12 player.
Yeah, well, he was voted by the offensive lineman of the Pac-12, the Morris Trophy. So,
he won the Morris
Trophy. Over Leonard Williams.
Yeah, and I know the NFL.com profile, their concern was, well, is he kind of a one-year deal? I mean, was this kind of the flash in the pan type of thing? And
he's gotten better every
year.
Yeah,
he's improved every single year. And then, as Coach Witt said this year, even in the offseason, the light turned on. You could see it. It just kind of flipped.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even Starr. I mean, Starr, he had one dominant year. Then the second year, he had five guys, you know, blocking him every step of the way.
Why doesn't this, you know, are you a one-year wonder apply to, you know, an SEC sophomore that comes out? right?
Exactly.
I mean, seriously.
Because it's the SEC, and they're so great that you just can't question them.
Yeah, that's it. That's NFL football.
But even so, I mean,
they do.
Have you guys looked at the list of the quote unquote top rated defensive ends? It's a joke.
It's very
Missouri defensive end didn't have Shane half Ray. The sacks. Yeah. Didn't have half the sacks that Orchard did.
No, I mean, it's annoying.
But and I don't believe that Missouri played as many top 25 teams either.
No, they were in the redheaded stepchild of the SEC, and even, you know, the SEC West got thumped in bowl season.
Right,
so
and they got the crushed day, in bowl season even.
So, I mean, at the end of the day, you kind of have to step back a little bit.
Well, and I mean, how do you not, as a broadcaster, you really know your product, right? I mean, Nate Orchard is the one that I just don't get. He's, like you say, Shane, you know, he's getting bad-mouthed just by about every service that I can see, but like you said, look at his footage from the Senior Bowl. He dominated him. I mean, he intercepted a screen pass, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah, and well, and, you know, you go
off
back
one of the players who's considered one of the top quarterbacks.
Well, and I mean, just between the fact that his peers in the conference voted him the best defensive player that they saw all year, but not only that, I mean, if you just go back and watch the footage. Yeah, he's not necessarily the strongest guy out there, where I think the NFL weight training programs will probably help with that. But he was beating guys off the edge. I mean, these were left tackles in the Pac-12. These weren't guards that he was beating. These were dudes that he was running around and making look foolish at times. I mean, UCLA, for example, I mean, he is in the backfield all day. Well, everybody from Utah is in the backfield. I got a sack against UCLA.
Well, what about Stanford? Stanford had an All-American left tackle.
Mm-hmm.
And
possible top 10 pick.
Yeah, possible top 10 pick. And Colorado State also had a highly regarded tackle.
Possible first-round pick.
He made them both look foolish.
Yeah.
I mean, he had two sacks against Stanford's tackle. He had two sacks against him. And this was a guy who was considered, you know, somebody you couldn't get by, right? A wall. And I seem to remember that against Stanford, he got one of his sacks on a bull rush. He pushed the guy who was much bigger back into the quarterback and sacked him.
Yeah, he would do that. He did that a few times this year, where he would reach around the guy and grab him with one arm and, you know, bring him down. I mean, it's just, I don't know if it's the fact that he's in the Pac-12. If they say it's because he's from Utah, I mean, that will kind of blow my mind a little bit, just because of the number of guys in the league.
It's got to be, though, doesn't it? I mean, the Pac-12, if you came from UCLA, you came from USC, even Arizona, it seems like he would get more respect than an All-American, Morris Trophy winner, what was that other award? The best defensive
Ted Hendricks.
The Ted Hendricks, right.
Award, yeah.
Yeah, the best defensive end
Won over Leonard Williams and Haoliki Kaha.
Yeah, and how are these guys rated higher than him? And like I say, then you look at
Ted Hendricks award winner last year was Jackson Jeffcoat out of Texas, who went undrafted, which is surprising.
So, anyway, outside of Roe, Potassi, and Orchard, then you've got the two wide receivers, Drez Anderson and Kalen Clay. We've talked a little bit about Clay, who really put himself under the gun by running a pedestrian 4.51. He did much better in the...
It's sad when that's pedestrian.
Well, it is...
It's just funny.
It is for Kalen Clay.
Sure,
I guess that's kind of what we should say.
Yeah,
it is
sure.
for Kalen Clay. Now, Drez Anderson, of course, did not run, but he did put up 13 reps at 225 in the bench press.
Yeah, and you know, with
for a guy that didn't play that strong, that's impressive.
Well, with the meat market that the NFL Combine is, if it just feels so dirty and so gross when you read some of these profiles. Like one of the NFL ones is like, well, he's very nicely built in the upper body, this, that, and the other. Like, what? Is this a male model type thing? Like, what's going on? I think this is football, but, I mean.
I was listening to ESPN 700, and they were talking about how the first day you come in your skivvies, and they poke you and prod you and measure everything about you. I mean, seriously, that's got to be, I mean, granted, it's a physical job interview.
Yeah.
But at the same time, that's going to be the most humiliating experience.
It's just gnarly. It's disgusting. And with Drez, I mean, he's always been, you know, just looking at him in his pads or even after practice, he's always been a cut, you know, well-trained individual. 13 reps, yeah, that's pretty solid. I mean, Rowe put up 19. Mm-hmm. So 13's good. But at the end of the day, with Drez, it's going to be two things. A, how's the knee and can he get his speed back? And then the scouts are already on him. And if you read his profile on NFL.com, the question is, can he catch the ball? So the scouts are always already on
him. And that's always been our question, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nobody here, okay? To a man, none of us question his speed. None of us question his athletic ability. None of us question his vertical, right?
His play after he catches the ball.
We question his hands.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you put six guys on him, he'll come away with it. But, yeah, exactly. It's the ones to where if he's, you know, pulling away from a defender for a game-winning touchdown and the ball goes over his shoulder and it hits off of his hands, his face mask, his hands, his, you know,
shoulder pads,
his cleat, his face mask, and then back onto the ground. I mean, it's –
See,
come on, dude.
Yeah, but after that catch in the Super Bowl, maybe that's valued.
maybe you just got to show that film. It's like, hey, look.
I can do that.
Look,
I can do that too.
See, I think the problem with Drez is I don't think he has bad hands. I think it's all mental.
It's
physical. I don't know if you mean does his brain control his hands, but his hands are bad.
Well,
I think
when you watch Drez have to make the circus catch, he can't think. He just does, and
exactly,
he catches it.
Yeah.
But when it's easy and he starts thinking, gets in his head, he drops it.
It's like on every one of those screen passes.
It's like the yips.
Yeah, I think he's spot on. I think you'll watch Drez, especially on like a screen pass, every single time the ball, he's tipped up for an interception, I guarantee he's looking up the field to see, okay, where can I go? He never watches in the ball as he's catching it. And you know, the joke we made a couple years ago, you know, Yak would be nice, but he's got to start with the C first.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, you know, he's got to – it's just a mental thing at some point. Unfortunately,
I think that's more fixable than just bad hands.
Well, I don't know if the NFL rosters or the NFL coaches will have patience. They'll say, well, we don't want to fix it. We'll find another one. I mean –
if you need another wide receiver and you take him in the seventh round,
sure. But
if you take him in the seventh round, he's not even guaranteed a roster spot.
Yeah,
I mean, he's got to go early if he wants to.
Yeah,
follow in his father's footsteps.
He might not have a chance to get coached. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Unless you're Calvin Johnson or somebody like that, unless you're the elite of the elite. For wide receivers and running backs, you are expendable. You're a dime a dozen. I'll go find another guy that will run a 4.4.
Right.
You know, it's just the nature of the business. You know, I love to see Drez make a roster. Drez is one of the coolest dudes that's ever donned, you know, the crimson and white. It's just between now and I believe he'll make a camp if he doesn't get drafted. If he does, he'll make a camp. But he's got to prove that he can catch the ball consistently.
occasionally.
Yeah. Well, if he sees preseason action, you know, if there's just a wide open slant route, damn it, Drez, you better catch it or else you won't make the bus home.
Oh, no, absolutely. And you know what? Honestly, like you say, the deep ball he was great at. It was those, you know, third and shorts, you know, the second and shorts, the
screen
quick
passes,
the quick slants
that
he would drop. Constantly, or he wouldn't play strong enough through the screen to hold off the defender and just get it knocked down. But folks, we're gonna talk a little basketball. We're coming off something that, you know, we as a show haven't experienced much this year, and that's a loss. You know, Utah went up into Oregon and split the Oregon.
Obviously, the Oregon loss definitely leaves a little bit of a bad taste in the mouth, especially, you know, I think Utah could have won that game. But
it was definitely winnable, sure.
It was just, they should steamroll ASU. And then the key is they got to get the Arizona monkey off their back. I think at some point that's kind of playing between the ears, probably more so than a lot of things. they got to figure out a way to kind of contain. I think they'll do a fine job with Stanley Johnson, which they did for the most part in the first game until he kind of got off in the second half a little bit. They got to contain a stupid little guard. I can't remember his
name. TJ McConnell.
McConnell, yeah.
Because McConnell went off in the first game, scoring, which was very atypical.
Yeah, he averages like 7 points a game or something.
Have you watched him since then? Whenever they need a basket, McConnell takes it upon himself to get a basket. He'll drive under. I mean, I can't remember what team he was playing, but he drives under the basket, and where our team would pass it to the corner, he turned around and pulled up from about 8 feet.
Yeah.
And drilled it.
See, and that's what Utah doesn't have.
Well, you know what? I think they need to – I think some of their guards, Utah's guards, need to use a few of their fouls. I think they need to, you know, let T.J. McConnell know that they're going to play just as physically as Arizona does. And honestly, I think that's the big thing to me that Utah has to really rectify in the rubber match, and that is they've got to match Arizona's physicality. And in the Huntsman Center, I think we can get away with it a little bit more.
Well, they need to border on get nasty. I mean, it's like knock somebody down. Like, don't let them push you around on the boards like you did down in Tucson.
And it was and against Oregon, the rebounding was pathetic too. They just got killed on the boards.
Actually, if you look at the last five games, they've actually gotten out rebounded. I think three out of the last five. Okay, it hasn't been a huge disparity. I mean, I think they got out rebounded by maybe six against Oregon, by one on the offensive glass, but it was enough. Yeah. I mean. It's like Coach Kriskoviak was saying this today, and that was that every turnover, it's funny, you know, some people say some things and you go, well, God, that's obvious, but I never thought of that before, right? Today he said, every time you get a turnover or you don't get an offensive rebound, you give up an offensive rebound, that's one for a turnover, that's one less possession, so one less opportunity to put up the ball. If you give up an extra possession by giving up an offensive, you give them another possession to try and score. And he was saying I don't think that they played very badly in the first half. They had just Oregon had seven more shot attempts, and he said if we get, you know, half of those, we get two more shots, we, you know, that game's tied up at halftime. And he's right. Again, it's one of those things you go, God, that's kind of obvious, but I never thought about that. Mm-hmm. They cannot give up. And here's another thing. They cannot have empty possessions against Arizona. Remember they had at least two shot clock violations against Arizona? Yeah. They cannot have empty possessions against Arizona. Every possession is going to count. They need to force Arizona into some empty possessions, turnovers. And like you said, Shane, I mean, you've got Stanley Johnson, you've got Caleb Tarzewski.
He's just a big ugly.
Maybe so, but I mean, he's an effective player.
Yeah.
I'm forgetting.
Rondae Hollis Jefferson.
Yeah, Hollis Jefferson. I mean, they've got some talent there, but the most dangerous player on the floor for Arizona against Utah may be T.J. McConnell.
Well, it definitely was last time.
Yeah, and Arizona's not an offensive juggernaut at all. I mean. Utah's a much better offensive team than Arizona. Arizona's just a banger. They're gonna get they're scrappy and they're athletic. Which, you know, when you combine all those things, you get a lot of second chance points, you get a lot of dunks, you get a lot of transition. But if you can keep Arizona in the half court, limit it to one shot, Utah should win the game, and they should win it probably fairly comfortably if they can do that. But the question is. Will they? And I think that's going to be the big thing come, you know, obviously senior day now, which would be on Saturday.
To me, Arizona is just the most consistent team in the league. And what I mean is they're going to score, 74 points a game. That's their thing. If you score 76, you're going to beat them. You score 72, you're going to lose. I mean, it's really almost about that simple. They are the most consistent team. They're going to score. They're going to be just, you know, they're just going to grind out the game, and they're going to do what they do, and you have to stop them. They're not going to beat themselves. You're going to beat yourself.
Yeah.
So you have to just simply be better than Arizona on that night. And
just
that's what
tough.
And it is. Like you say, Shane, they're physical, they're big, they're athletic. They jump. They can score. They're not particularly good shooters outside of TJ McConnell, who really is. But they keep coming. Yeah. You know, every single possession, they just keep coming. They don't quit. They never think that they're out of a game, so they just keep coming. And Utah, in order to win this game, is going to have to beat Arizona. Just flat out be the better team on the floor. I mean, somebody's going to be listening to this show and go, well, that's kind of obvious. No, really. Against this team, if Utah is average, they're going to lose. They have to be really good.
Well, and I just, as you know, the Oregon game was happening the other day, and I was driving around town for the first little while, and I was listening to it on the radio, and I kept hearing, as you said, Flamenco, empty possessions. Where, and the thing is it reminded me of a football game a little bit. It's like, come on, guys. I mean, you can't waste opportunities, and that's going to be extra important against Arizona. They can't wait. If you're on a 3-on-1, that better be converted. It better not be a foul. It better not be, you know, all of a sudden we pull it out and run the offense, which is fine most of the time. But if you're on like a 3-on-1, you better convert.
Got to score.
Especially against Arizona.
Free throws. Make your free throws. Get the rebounds. Get the 50-50 balls. It's one of those things to where they just have to convert on the opportunities that are presented to them. And then if they do that, they'll be in good shape. They just can't keep – they can't give up those opportunities. And they can't give Arizona extra opportunities, or else that's – obviously, the Huntsman Center provides a whole different experience than the McKell Center down in Arizona, but that's where...
But the ball bounces off the rim the same way.
Yeah, but that's where a win gets flipped to a loss pretty quick.
No, you're right. I mean,
it's pulled away.
It's
from
a
you.
Terribly tough place to play. Same way the Huntsman Center is a tough place to play for everybody else, not named Arizona.
Yeah, it was pretty tough for them, though. They just haven't gotten.
I mean,
it
was
yet.
Utah took them to overtime last year,
with opportunities to win.
With opportunities to win, but they haven't been able to do it. Yeah. I think that they have ever. I mean, this is, let's be honest, and Shane, you and I were talking about it earlier. This is their last best chance. It really is, or maybe better said, their first best chance.
Yeah,
under Larry Krzyzewski.
Yeah, there you go.
This is their best chance, and who knows how good this team will be without DeLon Wright next year. I mean, sometimes it looks like this team will be just fine. Other times, like against like against Oregon, where he scores 20 points and has 5 assists and 3 steals and, you know, 2 rebounds.
Played really well, yeah. And when are teams going to figure out that he doesn't go down court after the offensive possession? He likes to hang around the inbounder. And at least once a game, he steals an inbound pass underneath his own basket. When are teams going to scout that? That blows my mind. Just like,
well, I hope they keep not.
Yeah,
doing
absolutely.
It.
Keep chucking it to him underneath his own basket. Just, you know, obviously, I can't remember who scored the quick layup. Then DeLon steals the ball, throws it to Taylor. Taylor nails a 3, all within 10 seconds. And he did it 2 or 3 times against BYU. He's done it almost every single game. And every time I watch him, I'm like, dude, just look at – he's standing right by the dude you're inbounding to. Pay attention. It blows my mind. Just, but keep doing it, please.
Well, to me – okay, guys, let's just hit your main your key to the game. For the Arizona, because let's be honest, none of us are worrying about the Arizona State game. It is a blackout for Utah fans, so remember to get your blackout gear. And you know, this weekend I'm gonna reiterate what has been said on the local radio: get out to the game early. Okay,
oh,
don't let us be 10 minutes into the Arizona game and half of you are still not in your seats.
Don't be a Utah fan.
Let's be that's exactly what ESPN 700 said. Don't be a Utah fan. I mean, it's kind of our trademark, really. You know,
how I said I hate our fans.
Even I had a friend
it's
that went
just
to gymnastics.
Like our trademark, really.
Friend that went to the gymnastics meet, and that was standing room only crowd, and it was middle of the first event before everybody really showed up. You know, it's
our
sad
thing. Well, part of it, you know, and
running on Mormon standard time.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll give Utah fans a little bit of a break, because the parking situation up there is atrocious.
Yeah, but everybody knows that.
Yeah, but it still doesn't mean it's easy to find a parking spot.
Don't drive. Take tracks. Figure it out. I mean, that's one reason why I get up to a football game, and I'm in the seat an hour ahead of time because, like, you know, I don't want to deal with parking. I want to get there early. I mean, just figure it out.
Well, it's a Saturday game, folks, so you got plenty of time to get up there.
So they'll get there about, they might get there about 5 minutes in the game.
Well,
so
let's try and everybody get in our seats by 30 minutes before game time.
They need to advertise the game differently.
Let's really give Arizona a taste of what the Huntsman Center is really all about before the ball goes in the air for the tip-off. I mean, let's really rock the Huntsman from the opening tip-off. So, Alex, what's your key to the game?
I think they you know, watching especially the highlights of the Oregon game, it was just maybe the actual numbers weren't huge, but it seemed like they just got killed on the boards. And a team like Arizona that's physical, athletic, you know, they can just, I mean, you watch how high they can jump and it's just like, dang.
Well, Arizona just destroyed us in fact, on the offensive glass, it wasn't even close.
Yeah.
And as Shane was saying, Arizona's too good to give second chances to.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, Utah needs to get the defensive rebounds, not give Arizona second chances on offense, and they need to do better on the offensive glass. That's, I think, the main thing. If they win the rebound margin, I think they will win the game.
I think that's probably a definite, you know, if we improve that much, I think that's definitely a good sign. I'm going to say that my key to the game is getting the ball to the bigs. Mm-hmm. We have a player who, I think all game long, had four attempts at the basket, and that was Jakob Poeltl, who's shooting nearly 70%.
And it was what? He had what, one attempt against Oregon State? And granted, part of that was foul trouble, but...
That's most of it for both games.
But you know what? Even so,
they couldn't get it into any of the bigs against Oregon State's zone.
They can, they don't. Because what they do is they dribble it around and they wait. Yeah. Then, you know, after the guy has been set up for a while, they allow the double team. Larry Krzyzewski, just tonight on his coaching show, was talking about how disappointed he is in what he calls the little guys.
Everybody's a little of him.
Seriously, fans, if you haven't met him, the guy's really nice, actually. Very, very personable guy, but very intimidating.
Yeah, you'll be terrified to shake his hand, but once you do, you'll be very happy.
He's a nice guy, but man.
Don't piss him off.
He's like Lurch.
For real.
He is.
With an NBA career.
I want him to come out and go, "You rang." So... In any case, my key to the game is getting the ball inside. I think Jakob Poeltl in this game against Arizona needs to touch the ball 15 times at least. At least. I think he needs to have at least 10 to 13 attempts. I don't think Utah can win unless he has at least 10 touches. 10 touches in the paint. Because he'll make something happen. He will get fouled, and granted, that's almost like a turnover. But
he's gotten better.
He's gotten a little better. He went 1 for 5 against Oregon, though.
Yeah.
Another back. He took a step back, but he is much better. I mean, against Oregon, even when he missed, you could tell that he's really trying his best. You know.
Well, his shot.
There's actually maybe a chance go in when he misses.
Well, the thing is,
they're not just flat out clang.
Yeah. Well, his shot is not really broken. It's a fine looking shot. It's just
not going in.
Yeah, it's just not going in. So it's at that point, it's just one of those mental things. Yeah. At some point, Mikey's going to be kind of generic, but I think it encompasses a lot of what you both said. I think be the aggressor. That means. Stunt and stem, as old Coach Boylan used to say. You know,
actually, have you heard Krzyzewski? He said the same thing, but he's got a different term for it. His is like stick and move or something like that.
It says, you know, get the boards, don't mess around. I mean, keep them off the boards as well as attack on offense. Mm-hmm. Don't let Arizona settle in. I mean, The three best defensive teams in this conference are Utah, Arizona, and Oregon State. And I think we saw that against Oregon State just a few nights ago.
Yeah.
You don't want to get into a track meet. but don't let them get comfortable in a defensive set. So constantly attack and move the ball. As you say, get the ball in the Pirtle, don't let him kick out. I mean, Loveridge has been shooting the ball very, very well this season. Yeah, he didn't. He's streaky, and that's the thing against Oregon. He'd hit two or three in a row, then he'd miss two or three in a row.
You know, the thing about it, though, it just kind of dovetailing on what you were saying, is that Oregon was double-teaming the post, okay? Mm-hmm. They don't have the bigs to handle Pirtle or even Chapman one-on-one, okay? Arizona does. Down in the McHale Center, they'll go one-on-one with Tarjewski against Pirtle.
They'll go
one-on-one. If we can get him the ball in the paint, he can beat Tarjewski, and Tarjewski will probably get the fouls.
Yeah.
He's a bruiser. He likes to body. He likes to slap. He in the Huntsman Center, he will probably get some fouls. I think we have to, like you said, attack. The middle. Attack the rim. Get to the basket. Well, don't just pass the ball around the perimeter.
Exactly.
Even if the ball touches the paint, it doesn't necessarily have to be an attempt in the painted area. It just has to
go
touch the paint,
and
then kick it back out, or you know, drive and kick, anything like that, just to where you get Arizona's defense is moving. I mean, they move very, very well, but keep them moving, and damn it, do it for 40 minutes. Make them run at altitude. This is the second game of the Rocky Mountain road trip for them.
Yes, it is. It is.
Their second game, yes.
So it's not exactly – they're going to be a little bit wary, and you know what? Eventually, the altitude might catch up a little bit earlier in the game.
Mm-hmm.
So make them work on both sides of the ball and just take it to them, be aggressive, and good things are going to happen. They just have to be aggressive with it.
Absolutely. Yeah, the one thing that I don't want to see is Utah passing it around the perimeter and then hogging up threes late in the shot clock.
Yep.
I mean, that is not to say that I don't want to see him shooting threes, but I've been saying for a few weeks that this team functions better when they go inside out rather than outside in. And I was really happy to hear the coach say the same thing today. I've also been saying that Utah is probably one of the worst entry pass teams in the country, with two of the best guards, I think, with one of the best backcourts, but they are terrible interior passers from the perimeter. In fact, do you know who the best entry passer is on the team?
Probably Loveridge.
That's Brett Cott Chapman.
I was just going to say Chapman.
Chapman.
I was thinking. He had some beautiful passes.
He's the one who can pass it into Pirtle for a dunk, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that is not to say that, you know, DeLon Wright or Taylor have never done it, but I mean, your 6'8 wing, your 6'8 power forward is probably your best entry passer. We need our two point guards to be a little better against Arizona. They've got to get the ball in, and we've really got to pound the ball inside against Arizona, not because they're weak in the middle, but because if we do, good things happen because this team does better going inside out. All right, fans, we're going to wrap this up for us this week here at the Red Zone Store. Remember to come on down and pick up some shirts and some shorts and, you know, sweats and whatever else you may need.
Swag.
Jackets. All the swag you can possibly need. Anything you can think of with a U logo on it is down here. So come bring your... come bring your business down to the Red Zone Store. All right. Remember to follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, check out our YouTube and Ustream channels, and visit BlockU.com. We appreciate all of you listening to us, and we'll see you next time.